Okay, so obviously we are starting with, yesterday we went through narrative, we looked at narrative technique, we looked at what's supposed to be in a narrative, we looked at best ways to engage your audience with a narrative. So obviously, if you weren't there yesterday, you will download the podcast, I'm sure, and then follow along with that too. Everything today is kind of related to the Discovery Creative Writing Student Book, which all people seem to have in front of them. I've also put a PDF on the folder that I'll share with you, so in case you don't have it and or you know someone else that doesn't and they can get a copy of it, that's fine. I do have spare hard copies as well too. So I picked out particular activities or particular sections that I want us to look at today. And if we just look at the introduction, which is on page 3, on my one, obviously, I've highlighted specific things. I'm just going to read through some of them, so I just want you to follow on. So as you can see, in the second section of the area of study exam, you're required to compose a piece of creative writing concerned with an aspect of discovery which responds to a specific writing task and incorporates the given stimulus material. That's pretty straightforward, so that you know exactly what you're doing. Section 2 is a narrative. They're going to give me some kind of stimulus. I need to be able to respond in some kind of way. These things, the next bit is the bit that I guess sometimes you may gloss over when you see this in a question. You are assessed on how well you. So this is the only way that a marker is able to actually look at something and say, this is the standard of what I expect from this response. You know what I mean? They can argue that this person hasn't got it because it says they need to have it here. Therefore, if they haven't got it, they can say, well, that's why they've been marked so low. So for example, this one here is how well you express your understanding of discovery in the context of your studies. And that's the thing, I guess, that distinguishes your response from somebody else's. Like, you can't imagine how exciting it would be to mark that many different narratives. I was being very sarcastic there as well, too. If it's exactly the same thing over and over and over again. Oh, no, I discovered that, blah, blah, blah. I discovered that whatever it is. Because a lot of the time, the teachers just give them an idea and then make the class do it. Remember, this is the section also too that is also written by standard students. So they're going to have those things. They're going to cling on as much as they can to something that the teacher's given them. Whereas you guys hopefully are going to go a little bit beyond, I guess, the idea of it. Something that I'm going to give you and something that you can actually use from the class. So the organization, development and expression of ideas using language appropriate to audience and context. This is the bit, I guess, that distinguishes yours from other people's as well. You know there's a narrative has to have a particular structure, orientation, complication, resolution. However, the different types of techniques that you put in there is going to be the thing that makes yours better or worse than somebody else's too. I mentioned yesterday that I personally like flashbacks because it you are able to manage time really, really quickly. You're able to add context to your story really quickly, and it kind of just fills in the gaps as you go. But it feels like more of a detective kind of thing, and it just drip feeds you little bits and pieces at the time. Depending on, I guess, the topic of your story, though, too, you may not be able to use flashbacks in yours, okay? So, like I said there, in previous years, the Marking Centre, every year when we do HSC marking, we write down feedback, like detailed feedback. The whole survey thing takes us usually half hour to 45 minutes just to give the survey every single year. So we give you, and each of the marking groups that I mark with, there are 9 classroom teachers that mark, and there is a senior marker, so then you've got about then, so we've got roughly about 80 or 90 teachers just in the section that I mark. If each one of us is doing that, then in other areas, for example, Wagga, Bathurst, wherever, if they're all doing it and it's all coming together, it is, we're saying to you basically that we value what you guys are doing and what you're writing. So I'm hoping that you guys at some point will actually go and see, you know, these things. These notes are available on the NESA site, so from the Marking Center. These were some of the attributes that they generally will notice about higher responses. The control of language, so whether that's through tense, in terms of trying to stick with a particular tense, whether that is simple control of language through punctuation, grammar, spelling, even though spelling technically isn't being marked, there is an awareness of it in there. And that leads into the next one there, the punctuation, the sentence structure. Yesterday I put a couple of paragraphs up about engaging sentences. Remember, I had the one with five word sentences. Who was there yesterday with me when I read through my 5 word sentence thing?
Yeah.
Remember that? And how it got your attention a lot more, didn't it? Because you had short, sharp sentences and then you had really long ones and it kept your attention there as well too. Please refer back to my last podcast and you would see that there as well too. The power's gone to his head, hasn't it? A response of a length allowing the candidate to effectively explore the given concept. A length of 800 to 900 words. I've seen anywhere between 700 and 1,000 is probably a good response. Like, that's in the whole years that I've looked at HSC marking, that I've marked assessment tasks and stuff. Anywhere between your 700 and 1,000 is probably going to be, if you're going over 1,000, you're going to be way, way over your time. You're going to be using time from somewhere else. If you spend less time on your question one, section one, your short answers, you may have time to be able to write that much. It does definitely depend as well too, because remember, it is supposed to be essentially a short story. It does say it's a narrative. It's got to have its definite orientation, complication, resolution, but you've got to get through it relatively quick. Presenting a complete imaginative response. Imaginative is a kind of very interesting word there too, because I'm pretty sure that if I ask people in here what an idea for their narrative would be, it would be based on something that you know or seen or in a movie or a book or an idea or something. So there isn't anything that's totally imaginative, totally brand new. So don't worry if it's not, but I guess the whole idea is that you've actually kind of tried to adapt something. You haven't just retold some other movie, because we see them straight away. The problem with that, I guess, is that you can't be marked down for it again too as well. And that sounds really, really bad, that someone could just go and go, oh, hang on, this question links really well with Avatar. Let's just retell Avatar. I'll pick Avatar because people actually do, you know, you'll find a lot of people do actually retell the story of Avatar, but they don't call them the Na'vi, is it, or something? Is it the Na'vi? Yeah, and they call them a different name. They could tweak a little bit of bits and pieces, but essentially it's the same story. And because we can't mark them down for that, you know what I mean? Because they've basically stolen Avatar and said, here's my narrative. It's the way what they've said about the discovery within Avatar. That's what the thing would distinguish them. And generally, they just fall flat on their face. You got a question, Alex, for me?
It doesn't necessarily have to be exciting or...
You've got to get there. It doesn't have to be. It could be... Obviously, you don't want to bore them too. But again, you've really got to consider that if your person is switching off, the person that's marking it, and they're not paying as much attention as they can to it, they're not going to be able to pick up all the marks that it deserves. That's the other thing too. You've got to make it a little bit engaging for them to be able to sit there and go, wow, this student has really thought about this. They haven't just regurgitated something. So it's that...
It'll be easier for you to write about it if it's captivating too. Because
you'll be more flowing. It would be too, but also too, you've got to also consider that something that is captivating for one person might not be for somebody else too as well. So sometimes you just got to kind of do it and then really hope that it is, you know what I mean? And your best thing you can do with that is actually... sharing your ideas with other people as well, or not showing them necessarily everything you're doing, but just saying, hey, my story, I'd like to write it. If we had a question, I'd write about this, this, or this. What do you think? You know what I mean? And literally just talking about it with somebody else, and they go, oh, nah, that'd be a bit boring, actually. You know what I mean? Living in a country town, nothing happening, whatever, for example, okay? And getting that feedback from people, I think, is really important too. And I think generational-wise too as well, so something that I find engaging as an old man is going to be different to what you guys find engaging too as well. But I think it's not necessarily the content, it's the way you put it together. I think that's the distinguishing thing. Because there are some things, for example, I know you guys say I always put off watching Harry Potter because I'm not totally engaged with Harry Potter. However, I can see there's benefits for Harry Potter and the way, you know, the way they've done it, as a film as well too, or a series of films. So that's why I am suffering through it. But anyway... responding with originality and insight to the question. And this is again another distinguishing thing that you will see too. So you may come in knowing your question, your narrative, and you're right, I'm going to write about this. This is my character. This is what's going to happen to them. But then actually going, right, how can I use that in relation to the question? This means that you need to explore the concept of discovery in a subtle way. And that's not just hitting you in the face all the time with, they discovered this, you know what I mean? He walked through the door and discovered that. Dun, dun, dun. You know what I mean? Those things, they're just the cliche, you know what I mean? They're all those cliche ones. So, and I think sometimes too, the subtle discoveries are better, those slow trickles, the realization until later on, rather than that hit him in the face kind of thing with something, like the shovel in the face or something. They're a lot better, those little slow burners. And the ones where you kind of go, oh yeah, that was from, I remember that, that was that bit, you know? It's like your sixth sense. Oh, they're all dead, you know? He's dead, sorry, okay. But you know what I mean? It's like one of those things, you know? It really is profound, because once you find those things, you go, wow, it does blow your mind. I'm not saying you have to write something the quality of the sixth sense, but you get my idea. Structural complexity, cohesion, and the use of authentic, sustained, and engaging voice. So trying to keep that sustained amount there, which I think in, it says 800 to 900 words, within 700 to 1,000, I think you can, because it's not a lot. It's 4 pages, maybe 5 pages, depending on how big you write as well too, which I think is definitely achievable for a lot of you guys as well. If we turn the page, you can see we have an exemplar short story here. Some of you guys possibly may have seen this before, or an image based on this before too. The main thing I'm going to get you guys to look at is the checklist down the side. So I'm going to read through this, and then we're going to have a discussion at the end. And I just want you to see if you think you can identify that these things are in there. For example, does it have a distinctive voice? And that's not my distinctive voice, that's within the story. Description, specific audience, etc. And it goes through a whole list. So if, as I read it, you think that section, that part is in there, just really quickly tick it. You'll actually find that the checklist is actually repeated on each of your pages as you go along. So we've got it on page 4, 5, and 6. So as it says here, we're going to read and annotate the short story. You have an image. The image I'll just describe for the people playing along at home is a man, I'm going to assume man, in a suit, looking, carrying an old suitcase, looking up an old country lane out in the bush somewhere. There is nothing to distinguish it as a town or a city. There's no buildings around. A dusty track, a dusty street or something like that it is. And he's looking up, kind of a low angle mid shot, looking off into the distance as well too. So your class has decided to compile an anthology of creative writing entitled Rediscovered Country. You are required to submit a piece of imaginative writing which explores the impact of rediscovering a place suitable for publication in this anthology. So this is the basis for your imaginative piece. So you guys, as I go along, can you just tick it to see if it's there, and then we'll have a bit of a chat at the end. On New Year's Day, I asked my father if he would take me to his hometown and show me around. He agreed. In fact, he seemed rather excited that I was interested in a bit of family history. After all, the last time I had been dragged out there was some dozen or so years ago for the purpose of attending my father's school reunion. I was 17, and Tulimba may as well have been the end of the earth. Tulimba, New South Wales. Population 149. Actually, make that 147. We just heard that Wombat and his wife are leaving town. Since the New Year's Day trip, I've been asking myself why I wanted to go there in the first place. After all, it was a depressing and grueling trip through barren bushland and virtually abandoned paddocks, only to arrive at a humpy that was my father's home. I felt a little cheated. Where was the neat little home in my father's stories? You know, the one that Grandad and Uncle Ted built with their bare hands. Where was the kitchen where old Nan would beat cream for hours by hand to make butter? Where was the shed where Grandad would slaughter the sheep and string them up? That house was gone, and in its place stood a blue tin lean-to with an overgrown cactus in the front yard. Doors boarded up, waist-high weeds and rusted bits of machinery strewn about. We drove on. It got worse. That building used to be the bakery where Grandad worked. Really? That mint green tumble-down place? That in there used to be the hospital. A faded sign leaning against what remained of the fence read, Bush Nurse. The only saving grace was our visit to the local school, where my father proudly showed me the past student's wall and the brick with his name on it. The final stop was a cemetery, where my great-grandfather is buried. Just him on his own. I stood there for a few minutes, reflecting on how sad it is to be buried away from other family members. Dad muttered something about money. I nodded as though I understood exactly what it was like to grow up in abject poverty. We got back in the car, proceeded down a dirt road only because my father hadn't travelled it for 60 years and got a flat tyre. I told him that that's what you get for being nostalgic. So there we were in 45 degree heat, literally in the middle of nowhere, with no mobile phone reception, changing a tyre and praying that the brown snakes were having a day off. We've got the technique here, guys, which I can't tell you what it is off the top of my head, but time has passed. That's those three asterisks there together. I will find it out for you, though. All through my adolescence and into my adulthood, I have downplayed where I come from. When asked that particular question, it has always been easier and preferable to say Sydney and change the subject. My attempts to disassociate myself with my rural heritage and upbringing stem from a fear of being thought of as a redneck or a country bumpkin. A fear that others may perceive of me as ignorant, narrow-minded, unsophisticated, uncultured, or backwards. But it also stems from something else, a pervasive attitude in the wake of multiculturalism that there is something really rather shameful in being Anglo-Aussie. The response by some has been to aggressively assert a simplified and overtly masculine version of Australian identity that is characterised by barbecues, the beach, and beer drinking. All done, dare I say it, whilst wearing a Bintang singlet. Fathers like myself, the response has been to condemn this very form of Australian identity whilst waving the banner of multicultural Australia. Now, I'm not suggesting that embracing Australia's multiculturalism is in any way wrong. Quite the reverse, in fact. But there have been an element of subterfuge to it as well. As though believing in a multicultural Australian identity and all its associated virtues, turning this into a mantra that one lives by will divert attention from one's Anglo heritage. A heritage that we are taught is far from good and noble and, well, white. It was the feeling of being utterly fed up with being shackled to such shame and guilt that prompted my desire to go to Toolimba. I thought that if I saw the place where all the stories come from, then I would be justified in feeling that there is indeed good in my own heritage, that I do indeed have a culture, and that culture is something to be proud of, that it is valuable. And despite feeling a little cheated at the state of the place, I felt a surge of pride and a whole lot of humility. The men and the women of my family were pioneers. They belonged to a gutsy group who settled in virgin bushland and made a go of it. They didn't give up. Life was tough and the landscape unforgiving, but it didn't break them. They didn't let it. They kept going. Drought, bushfire, flood, they kept going. Their code of common decency meant that they looked after one another. They built communities. They raised generations of children to understand the importance of honesty, integrity, and hard work. These are all qualities to admire: the resilience, the stoicism, the dignity, decency, and pride of ordinary Australians. And these men and women are a part of me because my parents have told their stories. So we're going to do a bit of a discussion now, guys. So I'm just going to pause this for a second and we'll have a bit of a chat about what you guys have found out. Okay, we had some very good discussion. Everyone now is going to write a band 6 response based on this as well too. Good to see you guys. So we're turning to page 7. This is the stimulus and the writing task. So if we look at this, you can see the bit in bold, the second paragraph kind of there. A high range response to any creative writing task must make clear and effective use of the stimulus material. Even if you are using a narrative that you have written previously. I mentioned this yesterday too as well, that you really need to engage with the stimulus and not just superficially have a really brief reference to it. Yesterday I mentioned that you probably should be considering it at least 3 times, your orientation, complication, and resolution. Somewhere you should be making some reference to it. The next bit down, not too worried, but the bit in bold after that. The stimulus is there to help you create a thesis for your story. This is really interesting too, because a lot of time you kind of get confused about, okay, well, I know I need a thesis in an essay, but really a thesis in a narrative is not something that we kind of talk or think about a lot too as well. But essentially it's the main thing, isn't it? It's like your main idea in your narrative.
Where's go, Julie. Thesis in like the narrative, is it like the whole narrative as the thesis?
It could be part of, no, it could be like a section of. So for example, if we look at this bit down here, you can see the dot points there. Starting with process, they've just taken parts of the rubric and that could be your thesis, your idea could be based around a process of discovery. You could have a sentence in your story that talks about as the story progresses, you know what I mean, people proceed through and they discover something as the story moves on. So it depends on what it is, depends on what part of the stimulus you're looking at, depends on what you're saying in your story. They should see it. They should see it within there. It's kind of implied that it's in there. You don't need to state anything like the wording, you know, thesis or something or all. It should just kind of be there and be evident in there. Okay. In other words, like it says there, it is there to help you decide on which elements of discovery you are going to write about and what message you are going to convey to the reader about the process of discovery. So remember, discovery is massive by itself. You really need to break discovery down into a particular section or a particular part, depending on what the focus of your story is or depending on what the stimulus is. So you can see the dot points here are very simple. Process of discovery, sudden discovery, you know what I mean? Like, I think sudden discoveries are good sometimes too because people aren't expecting it. You know, the audience is reading it and all of a sudden something happens and it keeps it off. They're off balance, they're off guard, and then suddenly they want to read some more as well too. So sudden discoveries and unexpected ones are important too. The idea of wonder, you know, which I go back to the art of travel with that one too, the idea of the sublime, you know, the things that are just beyond, not recognition or, you know, but things that are just like, wow, that make you go, things that make you go, you know. I won't say that. Things that just make you kind of think, wow, what an amazing place the world is. You know what I mean? Just those moments where you have those as well too. And that's wonder, you know? Because wonder then can lead on to other things. Why is that like it is? Curiosity as well too. Being curious and being inquisitive, and your journey kind of narratives are like that too. People are inquisitive, so they go on these journeys to find things or rediscover themselves or things like that too as well. But I think also too, the next bit there, you can see confronting. Sometimes it's not all Disney. The world's not all like Disney, you know what I mean? Everything's happy and we're all good and the world ends nicely and, you know. Sometimes we need to be confronted with the reality of life too as well. And that's not scaring the crap out of someone. That's not like when your kid says to you, you know, what's rape or something like that, do you know what I mean? Like that, and you're like, oh, how do I explain that one? You know what I mean? It's not the idea of actually shocking them and telling them exactly what the way things are, but it's something about that's going to, again, get people's attention too, because it might be a topic that people don't generally talk about.
Yeah.
So by making it confronting and talking about it and looking at it in your perspective, it may make it more appealing than somebody else's. Impact. Impact's easy one, guys. The discovery happens. Something has to happen after the discovery. So the one after this was, they went to that story we just looked at. They went to their hometown. The impact was this person now then thought about where they're from, their family, what type of people their family were. That was the impact of discovering it. It wasn't just to look at old buildings. It was to actually go, okay, where am I from? Who am I? You know, what's my family like? And which leads into the people, relationships, societies, places and events. Okay, so you've really got to go in with an idea of, obviously, probably character or so, an idea from the rubric that you are going to take into your narrative, and then you're just going to have to try and tweak and adapt that to the question. You know what I mean? That's something that we definitely can't do anything about. If we turn the page over, we've got onto another activity, deconstructing the stimulus and the writing task. We have a photo. We have a photo of, let's go with a mailbox. It is locked. It is white. It looks shut. There is a fence behind it with a gate that is open leading into the background. It looks like it could be rural. I'm going rural anyway. There possibly could be something in the background that looks very blurry on the back. It might be leading up to like a farmhouse or something. But essentially what we would have to do with this obviously is to try and deconstruct what is actually happening. So this one here, you guys have actually got the dot points there too, but I've want you to draw attention to the headings at the top of each of the tables there. So you can see, for example, what is the photograph about in relation to discovery and discovering? So this is the thing, is this going to be, Emma's got a quick question for us?
Could we get a stimulus, like a photograph for the narrative?
You could get a stimulus, yes, that is that. You could get a quote, you could get a sentence starter, you could get, we don't know, like, you know, because it is the last year the HSC is going to be done this way, we just,
yeah.
All bets are off, basically. We don't know how it's going to look. It really does suck, unfortunately, for you guys, because even if you go back 10 years, for example, and you studied, you know what I mean, you said, oh, they've looked at this discovery, they've done this type, it's got to be this one. They might not, you know what I mean? They could, just because it is the last one, they could just do it a totally different way. I feel, personally, that the last 2 years in the short answer section, they haven't had a visual there for you. Therefore, I always think they will have a visual somewhere in paper one. Which means they probably, I'm not saying it will be in there, probably will be in the narrative section if it is anywhere. If they're not going to put it in the short answers, your problem with that is going to be too as well if they only give you one image and everyone has to do the image rather than a selection of. I don't even know. There could be a selection of. It could be. Yeah, it totally depends, you know what I mean? Because there are people going in, right, I know my visual techniques, you know what I mean? So I can analyze this straight away. There are other people that are really good with words, so they're going to actually be looking at the quotes. And I think the problem is they don't want to segregate anyone because it is standard in advance. So they might give you a selection. If they were going to give a visual, I reckon they would give you a couple to choose from, just to give you that choice. I personally think they would. Can't guarantee that. But I personally think they would because standard students, if they look at something like this, they might go, oh my God, what do I do with this? You know what I mean? Whereas you guys hopefully would run with it and just, yeah, get some good responses. Emma's got another question for us. Yep.
So would you have to like really sort of base your story around that photograph then? Or could you just weave it in a few little places?
I could, it depends on what the image is, I guess, too, as well. So for this one here.
How much you can say about this?
There is, well, in terms of techniques, I would talk about, I pick up the idea of a letter, obviously the letterbox at the front, you know, the mailbox at the front, leading to something as well. I get an image too of Saving Private Ryan, you know, when the message is, anyone seen Saving Private Ryan, where the no one's seen it, so I can't even describe it as well too. The idea behind Saving Private Ryan is that there are four brothers, and this is based on a true story. Three of them died in the war, in World War II, and the idea was that they had to remove the last brother because they didn't want the mother receiving the death telegrams for all of them at the same time. And essentially she did, she got it for the first three, and then Matt Damon's character in Saving Private Ryan is the fourth brother, and they go and they take him away from the war. But there's a really good scene where it's a farm, it's like Kansas or like country, you know, America kind of thing, and there's a Jeep or there's this army truck going along a dirt path up towards the house, and the mother looks down and she can see the army truck thing coming up, and she knows what's about to happen too as well. So I got that image based on just this little bit here too. So I've obviously got some context too, so I would see something in that. So straight away, I could engage with the idea of just the path and this country farmhouse kind of thing going up here, and the message, you know, these guys delivering the message too as well. So
yeah.
Yeah, you could do diary, but don't think about your always think about your structure. It's still a narrative.
Yeah.
So sometimes they're harder to do, because you're thinking, okay, am I writing a diary entry, which is, it looks different. You can visually see it's different than a narrative. But I guess it does say creative piece of writing too.
Yeah.
Even though they always say do narrative, do narrative, do narrative. So I guess it depends on what the stimulus will be, and we don't know till we, well, you guys will see it for me anyway, like I said. Second part of that is you can see what literal or concrete elements of the stimulus could be used symbolically or metaphorically, and what could be the message of your story. These are the things you should be doing in the reading time. So as you're reading through, you're not just going, okay, I know my narrative. You should be analyzing that or processing these types of questions in your head. How can I use this? What part of this can I actually do? Am I literally going to be using the mailbox as the idea of a message here too? Or is it going to be something a little bit more, you know, a bit deeper than that? Yes, Julie, got a question?
So when we look at, like, what is it, the stimulus, like, and it's a photo.
Yeah, look at the stimulus, yep.
We don't have to always choose, like, write it based off of, like, what's, like, the main part.
The literal part of it? Yeah. No, I wouldn't necessarily look at the literal. I, for example, the other one I just said before was the path, you know, the dirt path leading up. That's, I would take part of that, and that would become my...
Allowed to do that?
Yes, you can do it that way too as well. The standard students, again, I refer to them as standard. Not all standard students are bad, by the way, guys. Some are really amazing and they should be doing advanced. But I actually went to my daughter Ebony's year 10 into year 11, and the top student at the entrance last year did standard. Got an ATAR of 96 point something, nearly 97. And I said, why didn't they do advanced? You know what I mean? It really was a shame. But anyway, so the top student was doing standard. But anyway, the lower students... They need something literal to cling on to. They will talk about a mailbox. They'll talk literally about the postie coming along, putting something in the mailbox, and the discovery is of something. It will be something maybe even as simple as a bill. Oh my God, I didn't pay the water bill or something like that. There'll be kids that will, you're laughing, but there'll be kids that will write that. Can you remember how a while ago we had I showed you the image of the bottle in the water?
Yeah.
And they literally described, yeah, it was like out of it, like a submarine's kind of like a circle of a window, and there was the bottle floating in with a message in it, and they literally just described what they saw. You guys laughed at that too as well. So I guess my idea is pretty good about the postie coming along and delivering the late bill anyway too. So this is just things that you guys, I guess, could think about. So in your own time, because you have a lot of it, not now, you can see some dot points about how this image has been analysed. I'm very happy for you to go back through and look through past papers and use them if you want to me to give you some other stimulus ideas as well too. I'm happy to do that as well, but obviously for today we don't have enough time to do that. If we flick over the page, we're on page 9. So what they've done at the top is they've basically broken down the question for you, just like any kind of essay question. You should also break down the narrative question. The bits in bold, you can see they correspond with particular parts of the question. The photograph, it talks about always be conscious of all the information present in the question. The question's there for a reason. It's not just like, okay, I'm naturally in section two, I have to write a narrative. The question is there because they want to make sure you read it. They want to make sure you know what you're talking about. It does say a piece of imaginative writing. This tells you the text type you need to write in. In this case, a narrative is a good choice, although other text types are also an option. Like I said, the diary kind of style-ish, depending on how it's written. And then the impact of the discovery, that's the bit they've taken from the rubric. So if, for example, you had chosen another section of the rubric to discuss, for example, the... I'm just going back here for a while, back to the dot points. What was that first one? The process. So I'm going to pick out process. Maybe you've just gone and focused, right, my story is going to be about someone slowly finding something out, the process of realizing something. I would then still have to talk about an impact after that, because it does state that in the question. If we move on to the bit now on your own, like it says there, guys, complete the activities on page 10 using the creative writing task below. We have a statement for this one, guys, a quote from Marcel Proust. The real voyage of discovery consists not in seeking new landscapes, but in having new eyes. Drawing on the ideas in this quotation, compose an imaginative piece of writing that explores how discovery can lead to changed perceptions of ourselves and others. So if you turn over the page now, we have a table that is blank. So you're going to have to probably be flicking between page 9 and page 10. So if you want to refer back to the quote. And basically you can see the three questions are there for you. What is the quotation about in relation to discovery and discoverying? Did you like that bit there, Julie? Discoverying. What literal or concrete elements of the stimulus could be used symbolically and metaphorically? And what could be the message of your story? So I would like you guys to have a quick go of that one now for me, please. I reckon that's probably all that we get time for. I'm going to go back on pause again while you guys do that.